if they walk the same path every time and there's a crack in the sidewalk, for example, or a pothole in the parking lot, after a while, they don't see that issue anymore. So if it doesn't get repaired, it's going to fall off the list. So if they walk a different path, the next time they walk by the pothole, if they've missed it the last couple of times and see it again, it's, oh yeah, I forgot, I got to take care of that pothole. Unfortunately, as people walk a property, management walks the property, they do it so frequently that that one item that needs to be repaired becomes overlooked over time because they see it all the time.
Welcome to How to Buy Giant Apartment Buildings, the number one show about growing your family's wealth with apartment building investments. Now, here's your host, Mark Allen Kenny.
Hey everybody, welcome to How to Buy Giant Apartment Buildings. I'm Mark Allen Kenny. Our guest today is Daniel Simpson. How you doing, Daniel?
I am well. Yourself, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you for being here. Daniel is the asset manager of Nighthawk Equity, which currently has over 1,700 units under management and a portfolio valued at over $70 million. Daniel has over 25 years' experience and holds an exceptional record of acquiring and repositioning value-add properties for owner and investor groups in as little as 18 months. Daniel, thank you for being here. Could you tell the listeners a little bit more about your background and specifically how you got involved with asset management?
Sure. Well, first of all, it's great to be here. I appreciate your speaking with me. I got started in real estate really a long time ago in the 80s, late 80s, and I started on the other end. I started as a contractor. I had family that was involved in real estate. I just kind of migrated through one sector to the other. I've done everything from the contracting side to sales, management of single family homes. I did Air Force transitions, and I just kind of grew up in it. That's all I've ever really done.
Nice. Okay. And then how did you kind of gravitate towards managing larger apartment complexes?
Yeah. So I started out with smaller ones, you know, 10 and 15 unit deals in, as part of a single family portfolio. I had 1031 exchange investors from the West. And we started out buying, you know, single family homes, duplexes, triplexes, and then some small buildings. And it just kind of migrated from there. I moved, I've worked for myself and for other companies over the years. So as I changed, I tried to hit the niches that I really liked, which was multifamily. For a long time, I worked in the nonprofit side or a company that was owned by a nonprofit. I enjoyed that as well and ended up working for a national developer for a while on the tax credit side and then discovered, for lack of a better term, homegrown investors kind of. And stumbled upon the C2B class renovation type deals, and I found it fast moving, fast paced, exciting, and really rewarding. It's kind of cool to watch it happen.
Yeah, that's amazing. So yeah, I mean, you've got an incredible track record. You're an expert when it comes to asset management. So I'd love to just dive in with some of the nitty gritty questions about details on asset management, if you're okay with that.
Sure, we'll give it a shot.
Awesome. So I've heard you say before that the PM, the property manager, is more of a people manager, and the asset manager, you know, they're managing the finances, they're managing, you know, the numbers of the deal. Can you elaborate a little bit on that and how that works?
Sure. So the asset manager, in my view, works as the intermediary between the property management and the ownership group. Property management focuses on managing the leasing and occupancy and, you know, maybe the collections. And to do that, they have to manage a lot of people. And that is a time-intensive task. If you've never done it, it's complicated. It's probably the most challenging part of management is people. The asset manager is the person in the middle. That makes sure that the management company is first of all, providing the right goals and then hitting those goals. By goals, I mean financial, of course. They're making sure that the any projects or what have you are being implemented correctly within budget. They work between the lender and the property management, the lender and the owner. So they kind of fill that gap and allow the ownership group to do what they do best, which is acquire and dispose of assets, right? Rather than getting into the weeds themselves. That's kind of my view on it. As the asset manager, you don't manage people per se, you manage the project as a whole. And you try and maintain that chain of command so that you don't interfere with property management's business.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. So the PM's managing people, the day-to-day stuff, and then as an asset manager, it's kind of your responsibility to keep an eye on the finances. Are there any other sort of KPIs that you look for, or maybe some new asset managers might miss? I think I've heard you say that, you know, it's really important to keep your eye on micro trends, like what's happening with the neighboring properties. You know, are rents getting bumped? Is the competition doing renovations? That type of thing. Do you have a short list that you would recommend? Maybe an asset manager with not as much experience as you, what should they be looking for on a monthly basis?
Sure. So to kind of back that up, you know, the property management company is going to get your rent so far. And for them, the rent bump of $10 a month or $15 a month per unit is not a huge deal because it doesn't increase their income significantly. But as you know, it can increase the value of the property tremendously. So looking for the ability to increase revenue, whether it's rents or ancillary income, reserve parking fees, RUB increases, whatever it might be, is really something the asset manager should focus on. And to do that, they need to be looking at the comparable properties as well. The management companies will generally do a market survey. I follow those up and I look for the one property that's a little bit better than what we're at. And that's what we try and shoot for. And then we try and lead the market. It's always better to be leading, of course, but you know, it's funny because property management companies will get you to 98, 99, 100% occupied and say, look, we've done it, we're there. And you know, my first response is, well, your rents are too low.
Right.
We got rents up. We need a little bit of vacancy, you know. But so I think it's important that an asset manager looks at the market, the submarket. They're looking at the comparables, the rents, what the other revenue streams could be, making sure that your RUBs are at whatever the max is allowed in the area. And then, you know, any other little things that you can hit up and find that would generate just a little bit of revenue.
Yeah. Do you have any other examples of things that you can do to increase revenue, such as assigned parking, pet fees, increase in RUBs? Is there a short list that people should be aware of?
Yeah, I don't think I have anything new. I just look for everything. So depending on the market you're in, and some markets you can be helped by vendors. So in Texas, for example, or North Texas, for example, one of the things we discovered is that towing companies have a lot of leeway in what they're able to do for an apartment owner. So in some municipalities, they're able to come out and seal coat and stripe your parking lot in exchange for your towing contract. And they can provide tag systems for your cars, for your tenants. And they can actually, it's computerized now, so they can do it by the hour for visitors. And you can actually charge visitor parking. So if you had a property maybe that's near Cowboy Stadium, AT&T Stadium,
sure.
For example, I may know somebody that tried this once. They can set up hourly parking for visitors in specified visitor sections. It was no cost to the owner. The towing company set it all up. And, you know, they made a couple extra bucks on that each month.
Yeah.
But the pet fees, of course, are kind of a no-brainer. If you're going to take pets, you have to charge a fee. I think deposits have kind of gone away as a relic of the past. Now it's mostly just fees. You may have an incoming fee. You have a monthly pet fee, pet rent. You may do the quote-unquote poop patrols where you can find residents based on the DNA of the poop. That's one of the things that people are doing now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's becoming more and more common because the more and more you accept pets, the more that becomes an issue, right? But I don't think I have anything new. Just I look at all the particular options for each market and you can try it.
Yeah. That's awesome. So speaking a little bit more about just managing the property management company, I've heard you say before that as an asset manager, your job is to find the bad news and property managers don't like to report that news. So could you give some examples of, you know, how to uncover some problems that need to be fixed and you know, the right questions to ask your property manager?
Yeah, I review all of the operating statements on a continuing basis. So if I prefer to have online access, live access to the books. So depending on what software the property management company is using, I can have that. I work through the T12. I look for things that are missing, things that are unusual. I like to drill down through them. Sometimes, you know, you can catch them hiding things. If you've given them a budget of $2,000 a month for parking lot sweeping, just as an example, and, you know, they're on budget, and they miss. It may be that they've been over the whole time and they're just kind of sweeping it under the rug until they feel like they can sweep it, slip it in. And then the, you know, the rents and making sure that we're getting the collection. Some management companies have multiple income lines for rent, multiple delinquency lines that are above the line. They can be very challenging to read and figure out what your actual monthly write-offs or delinquency is. So it's important that you watch all of that very closely. I've seen property managers budget 1.5 to 2% delinquency, but they're consistently running 5 to 10. And that's a huge difference.
Right. How often should a asset manager visit their property?
So I like to go every month. I have a written worksheet that I work through each time I go to a property. And then, of course, I keep track of what I did done last time. Mm-hmm. It's generally an overview, depending on the property management company. If you have a good property management company, you know, you can just look at the bird's eye view from 10,000 feet. And then other times you need to, you know, really look more closely. So I do, because we do a lot of renovation work, I look pretty closely at them. I have a software program that I use as well that helps me track what's going on and grades the properties as well. Yeah, I think at least monthly, you kind of need to have your boots on the ground and be looking at it. You know, there's a, unfortunately, as people walk a property, management walks the property, they do it so frequently that that one item that needs to be repaired becomes overlooked over time because they see it all the time. So your fresh eyes are really helpful.
Yeah, that makes sense. So an asset manager should be once a month. And then for the property manager, I heard you say something that was really interesting, that you recommend they take a different path when they walk the property every day or however often they do it. Why is that something that they should be doing?
Right. So exactly for the reason I just stated. So if they walk the same path every time and there's a crack in the sidewalk, for example, or a pothole in the parking lot, after a while, they don't see that issue anymore. So if it doesn't get repaired, it's going to fall off the list. So if they walk a different path, the next time they walk by the pothole, if they've missed it the last couple of times and see it again, it's, oh yeah, I forgot, I got to take care of that pothole.
Sure.
And I think I also spoke about the show path. They should be walking it as well each day.
Mm-hmm. And that's for showing to new tenants, I assume?
Right. Yeah. So they should have a show path that they take, that the leasing agents take every day for every showing. Takes the prospective tenant by their amenities, by the things they want them to see. It avoids things they don't want to see. You don't have a show path going by a row of dumpsters, for example, and you don't set your model up facing the dumpsters.
Right.
You know, you make it one of your nicer units, as hard as it is to keep it off the market, but that's where you put it.
Yeah, that makes sense. What are some things that you look for when you're walking a property on the acquisition side? I know that you do a lot of C-class properties and value adds where you're repositioning some of these assets. Are there things that you like to see when you're looking at a property to possibly purchase it?
Yeah, so I've done due diligence work for quite a few years. And, you know, the first thing we always look at is how the property is performing financially before acquisition. I look through the financials to look for abnormal things, movement and delinquency, things that may be hidden financially by a seller. Not that anyone ever do that, but you got to look, right? And then we look at the surrounding properties, their condition in comparison to the one we're purchasing and where we want to be. We look at the wannabe comps, the properties we want to be like, and then the timeline on where we want to get, on how quickly we want to get there. And by doing that, we can determine, walking our subject property, what we might need to do, whether it's siding or paint or roofs. I like to bring contractors with me. So I like to work markets I'm already in or have been in so that I have people that can come. You know, a trick I've learned over the years in markets I've been in for a long time is I know the vendors that do a majority of the work for multifamily. So I can call them up and I can say, hey, you know, plumbing company ABC, tell me what you know about this property. And they are more than happy to tell you the work they've done over the last 20 years of the property and what they think may need to be done in the next 5 to 10. So we look at all of those things. And of course, the units. We always look at what it's going to take to bring those up to market price and maybe a little bit beyond. Recently, I've been looking at doing some unusual items, or I consider them unusual, like the touchless faucets or Nest thermostats. It's a small price bump over what we've been doing with goosenecks and sprayers to touchless. And it's just kind of cool. So when you show it, I think it's worth another $5 or $10 a month, maybe, if you have those items in it, because it's something else that a management company can really sell on and focus on when they're in a unit.
Yeah, that's really smart. So let's talk a little bit about the structure of asset management when it comes to, you know, doing a deal. So I feel like there's a couple different options, right? If you have a certain unit count, it kind of makes sense to bring an asset manager in-house. Is there kind of a threshold for when it makes sense for an operator to do that? Or, you know, a lot of people who are starting out are kind of doing their own asset management. Is there a unit count that you recommend where it kind of makes sense to bring somebody on to help?
Yeah, I think as soon as asset management interferes with your primary focus, right? If mm-hmm. your primary focus is acquisition or some higher level task, then that's when you need to do it. It's not necessarily the number of units or the number of properties. If you have 10, 50 unit properties, that could be very problematic doing the asset management versus one 500 unit property. That might be a little bit easier. But I think as soon as it begins to interfere with what your primary focus should be, or if you get tripped up and you're not sure what you're looking for or trying to do, then I think you should have somebody else involved to help you out.
Right. And what's the best way to find someone who can properly asset manage your portfolio?
You know, that's a really good question. So I think IREM, if you're not familiar, mm-hmm. The Institute of Real Estate, that's a good source. If they don't have somebody there that you like, they'll refer you out. And of course, Indeed and referrals. You know, I like people referrals. I haven't done work for anybody in the last 20 years that somebody hasn't said, hey, you know, Daniel would be good for this, or hey, Daniel, you need to go talk to this guy. And, you know, this is a really small world, as big as this country is and as many properties as there are. If, you know, I think there's a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, I think it's a much smaller world than the multifamily investment. I think it's probably 2 degrees.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. And then so maybe you find the person you like. Is there an industry standard for how to pay that person, basically? I mean, I assume they would get 100% of the asset management fees. Is it industry standard for them to also get a piece of equity on new acquisitions, or how does that part work?
You know, so that kind of depends. I've seen it go both ways, and I've done both as well. And some investment groups prefer that the asset manager and the property management company both have stakes in the deals so that they're tied to them, right? They're tied to performance. Others prefer that they don't have that. So I don't think there's any hard and fast rule. I would say, I guess, if the asset manager has zero interest in some sort of equity, maybe there's an issue. I don't
right.
know. But yeah, in general, I don't think there's a real rule for it.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Do you have any advice on how to learn to become a better asset manager, especially for someone who has a smaller portfolio or is just starting out? Are there any kind of mentorship programs or books or courses or anything that can teach you the ins and outs of how to manage your own portfolio better?
You know, there probably are, but unfortunately, I've been doing this for so long. I haven't been to a class, a real estate class, other than CE since 93, I don't think. But I will say, you know, it's okay to question your property manager. They work for you. They're technically an employee. And it's okay to ask questions, ask for detail, and to expect them to know it.
No, that makes sense. Yeah, you've just been in the game for so long that you're not looking at books right now.
No, not particularly.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah. Awesome. I was also curious about just different asset classes. So I know that you're a pro when it comes to C-class assets. Do you notice any major differences of when it comes to asset management, C-class versus B-class or A-class? You know, does it make sense for someone to specialize in one rather than trying to do everything?
Well, I think it's your preference. I've worked with investors that have had everything from D up to A in their portfolio at one time. I think that, you know, it depends also on what your end game is, what your goal is. You know, the C to B class lift can be very quick and very rewarding. There's also some risk.
Sure.
But that same risk exists to some degree in every investment class, right? You experience the same issues in every investment class, from my experience, from D to A. You have delinquency issues, you have qualification issues, you have vacancy issues. I have seen brand new A construction have net rents lower than C-class renovation on the same block. Hmm. So, you know, it just kind of depends. If you like the A-class stuff, then that's probably where you should concentrate. You won't be happy with C-class, you know, but the, you know, to me, the workforce housing, even some of the D-class stuff has been very rewarding. I enjoy the change. you know, some people call it gentrification. It really isn't. A lot of the properties I've done over the years have been falling to the ground almost. So it's a necessity. It's either we have to buy it and renovate it, or the residents are going to have to leave and go somewhere else. Some of them been that bad. So wow. It can be really rewarding to work in that D and C class market. The B market is maybe a little bit more challenging because it's kind of stuck there just below the A class, and it's really hard to find that niche of resident maybe. But in general, I think it's what you prefer, and whether you're a long-term or short-term, you know, cash flow or flipping.
It's that time in the show for a segment called Best Deal, Worst Deal, where we talk about real estate transactions that you've done in the past so that others can learn from your knowledge and expertise. So Daniel, with that said, what's the best real estate deal that you've done?
So I think the best one I've done was a North Dallas deal. It was a little bit scary when we acquired it. It was 117 unit deal. We were doing 24-month turnarounds at the time. So we would purchase with the anticipation of selling on the 24th month. Bridge loans, 24-month bridge loan, had to go to perm financing 30, 60 days out from there. I think there was one extension on this particular deal. The plan was to renovate 60%. The day we took ownership, the manager went to make her first deposit and the bank got robbed while she was there. And it was a walking distance across the street.
Oof.
So later on in ownership, we had our armed security guard was run off by another man with a rifle. Our guy ran.
Wow.
So it was plagued with issues, but we got it reasonably cleaned up. We renovated 40% rather than the 60%. And we actually got out of the deal in the 24th month with a lender I didn't like a lot. So I was really happy to do it. And we actually netted better than we anticipated. So,
nice.
You know, without diving into a whole lot of detail, we added a unit. We did a little bit over $2.5 million in profit on the deal.
Nice.
So it wasn't bad.
And do you remember what the return was for investors?
You know, I'm sorry, I don't.
No, no worries. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I don't. It was good. Everybody was very happy with it. They were not only happy to be out, but they were very happy with the cash return.
Yeah.
So we went in, I think at 59 was the purchase price, maybe 62 was our all in, and we sold it like 80.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, so it worked out pretty well.
Yeah. That's great. And what would you say is the worst real estate deal that you've done?
So I've done some pretty stinkers on my own. For a while, I thought I wanted to own some condominiums. So I bought a few condominiums in a small property. And one of the ones I owned was the only condo on the property that didn't have an assigned parking space. So the parking space was on the street. But the worst deal I think that I've seen that I was involved with for multifamily was a deal in South Texas. It was a 150-unit deal. We were warned not to buy it. We got it really inexpensive. The property was plagued with infrastructure issues. It had underground power line issues. It had underground plumbing issues. Mm. It had crime issues.
Did you know all that going into it?
So we knew some of it, but the decision was made to move forward because it seemed like it would be an easy, quick lift. And, you know, you go in, you do the exteriors, we do some of the infrastructure work, get it reoccupied, and the math made some sense that we could get back out in the 24 months, but that didn't happen. Instead, there was some serious crime that happened on the site. Then it had a fire, then it had another fire, and it actually moved backwards down the scale. So the property was in year five. We were supposed to be out in year two. Year five was drawing about $600,000 a year out of the investors' pockets. So it was just a nightmare. And it was just, you know, it was just a collision of bad luck. Really, the property, the location is excellent. And in another 5 years, somebody's going to come buy it. They're going to graze it. And they're going to put up a medical building or something. I just know it's coming. But in the meantime, it was a multi-million dollar loss.
Wow. What did you learn from that moving forward? Was there anything that, you know, were red flags that were big enough where if they were to come up today, you would walk away from a deal? Anything like that?
Yeah. So, you know, during due diligence, we were aware of a lot of the issues the property had, mm-hmm. but we felt we were able to correct them at a reasonable, much more reasonable cost than it ended up being. So we had allocated, I want to say $20,000 a unit, maybe quite a bit of money to the property, and it wasn't nearly enough.
Wow.
And one of the pieces that was missing was a ACM report, and that really cost us a lot with asbestos and remediation. The property had a lot of plumbing problems, and every plumbing problem was behind a wall that had asbestos in it.
Mm.
So it became very, very expensive. A simple leak, instead of being $350, which is, I think, what we budgeted for the shower manifolds, and I'm not sure why I remember that, but I do, ended up being a $1,200 or $1,300 repair. And when you start multiplying those things out, I mean, it's just terribly expensive.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
So listen to, if you take your PM with you, listen to them, you know, with a grain of salt, but listen to them.
Sure.
If they don't want it, there's a reason they don't want it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Awesome. Well, Daniel, we're getting a little bit short on time here, but I just want to thank you again for being here. You know, it's super helpful just to educate listeners about asset management and letting everybody know their different options and what they should be looking for when they're acquiring properties and then when they're managing it themselves and looking at these monthly reports. So I appreciate your time today.
Sure, absolutely.
Daniel, where can others learn more about what you're up to and connect with you?
They can get to me either through my personal email address or through Indeed. I am there. It's Daniel Simpson. If you search it, I come up pretty quickly on Indeed, but my personal email address is danielsimpson.tx@gmail.com.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. And thanks again for being here. I appreciate it. Have a great rest of your day.
Great. Thank you, Mark.
Hey, everybody. It's Mark Allen Kenny. I'm doing this crazy thing right now where I'm offering a free one-on-one call with me to talk about your investment goals. We can talk about syndications, joint ventures, whatever you're looking to accomplish in real estate. Just go to our website and book your free call with me today at giantapartmentbuildings.com.